Hello and welcome to Will You Still Love It Tomorrow? I'm Dave.
And I'm Annie. Each month we take it in turns to nominate a film, TV show or book we were a fan of before we were married and the other one doesn't really know.
Then we both watch or read it and come together to discuss our reactions. Fair warning, there will be spoilers.
This month, Dave's choice is a TV show that I'm sure I've heard about a lot, but never actually seen, which was the 1984 TV show Robin of Sherwood. So why did you pick it?
So it's an interesting one because I remember that I did watch it, but I remembered almost nothing about it.
Really?
Like you, I remember that it's very popular in that it was supposed to spawn a lot of other similar things. People say, oh yes, that was off the back of Robin of Sherwood years and years ago.
Okay.
So I wanted to go back and see this original thing that I do remember watching but don't really remember anything about. So yeah, that's how we got to be here.
Okay.
What did you think?
Yeah, I don't know what I do know what I was expecting. I think I was expecting kind of Hercules, The Legendary Journeys, and that is not what I got. But the overriding thing a few days later, I have to admit, is that he is a very attractive young man.
He is a very attractive young man.
Very attractive young man. But yes, it was darker than I was expecting it to be. I thought it was going to be light and silly, and it wasn't.
Mm.
Did it hold up for you overall?
So I'm going to...
Well, you said you can't remember what you thought before, so...
So I'm going to give it possibly the worst insult imaginable.
It was fine?
It was kind of dull.
Oh. I don't think I'd go that far. It was very slow.
It wasn't bad. Definitely wasn't bad, but it also wasn't good. It was just not very interesting.
Oh, dear. Well, we watched the first two episodes of season one, which was a double parter.
Mm.
And I would say that it could have been a single episode.
Oh, yeah.
Very easily. There was an awful lot of wafting about and very long shots and long silences and slow music.
It's atmospheric.
I guess, yes. But, yeah.
I think just when I said it was dull, I think that the problem is that we are in some ways spoilt by so many things that have come after it.
Probably.
Because in my head, even though I absolutely hated the last season of Game of Thrones, it's still in a lot of ways the kind of thing that in your mind when you get like medieval type shows that you kind of compare it to style-wise, and obviously its production values are like at least 10 times as much, so it's a very different look and feel, but I don't know. Anyway,
and it's also, you know, tale as old as time pretty much, and mm-hmm. there've been so many different versions of the Robin Hood story,
mm-hmm.
and so it wasn't anything new or exciting in terms of the story.
Well, that's not entirely true, but we'll come to that.
Okay, because I haven't written down a synopsis because he's Robin Hood, so, you know.
Oh, okay.
Well, he takes up with outlaws in the forest, and then there's an archery competition, and the Sheriff of Nottingham is a bad guy, and Maid Marian has to be rescued, and, you know, it's nothing particularly new about it in terms of telling the story.
It is interesting, we only watched the first two episodes, and the first two episodes cover the kind of arc you would normally get if you're going to do the film.
Yes.
Except the Sheriff of Nottingham isn't properly defeated as he would be in the...
No.
What's his name? The actor in the famous Robin of Sherwood film.
What, Robin Hood, Prince of Thieves?
Kevin Costner.
Yes.
Yeah. Yeah, so in your Kevin Costner film, you know, Sheriff of Nottingham is off-screen at the end, whereas in this one he survives for another three seasons. But otherwise, yeah, so it would be interesting to know what was going on in the other three seasons, because obviously they'd have to introduce a lot more plot, because we've done the standard Robin Hood bits just in the bit that we watched, so it might have gone to some very different places, but
true,
we'll never know.
You don't want to watch any more then?
Don't think so.
No. Fair enough. Anyway, do you want to do some facts? I have utterly failed. I forgot my facts. What have you got? You always have all the facts.
So I have quite a lot of facts.
Of course you do.
I probably have too many facts. To give you an idea about the facts and about the fact that I didn't think the show was particularly interesting, my favourite two things in this show are both in the facts section.
Oh dear.
So,
well, you can all just switch off the episode in the next 2 minutes, listeners.
I will very quickly go through some stuff. So it was on 1984 to 1986.
Yeah, so I was too young for it at the time.
26 episodes over three series. The third series was twice the size of the first two.
Right.
So they did two very short series and then a much longer one. It's notable that the person who played Robin, Michael Praed, as you say, is very pretty in the first two seasons, was then killed off at the end of at the end of season two. And then another character came along and took up his title of Robin of the Hood and went off and did the same kind of thing.
Wow.
But he didn't
he
wasn't being the same person. He had had a different name. He just took the mantle on and went on and,
okay.
and did it. So
that is quite interesting.
So to give us an idea of other stuff that was on around the same kind of time, it was Tripods was the kind of thing.
Yes,
that was on at the same sort of time.
Well, I watched that. I didn't watch this. But Tripods was more aimed at a younger audience than this was.
Ooh, really? Anyway, we could talk about that another time.
Okay.
It inspired things like the 2006 to 2009 Robin Hood show, which I don't think I ever watched.
Yeah.
Merlin, that was very popular.
Yeah, I saw some of that.
And a thing called Britannia, which apparently was on from 2018 to 2021 and was highly inspired by the mystical parts of this show, which we'll talk to in a bit, which again, I'd never heard of.
No.
So it was produced by a production company called Goldcrest, who had previously, in the couple of years directly before this, produced both Chariots of Fire and Gandhi.
Wow.
Both of which had won Oscars. But then shortly after this, in 1986, produced a film called Absolute Beginners, which you may or may not have heard of, but is famous for absolutely destroying Goldcrest because they put a load of money in. They put a huge amount of money into making it and then it absolutely burned. I think it was David Bowie.
Well, yes, I mean, the title is a quote from one of his songs.
Yeah, but it just destroyed the company completely.
Wow, it's unfortunate.
It was shot with cinematic rather than TV lighting, and it was also filmed on film rather than on VHS, so it does look better than a number of shows around at the time. Mostly filmed outside on location, so Blaise Castle and Vassals Park were most of the places it was done. Not that much was actually done in studios. The soundtrack, which is an album called Legend, which is done by Clannad, which is a band that I really like, won the BAFTA Award for Best Original Television Music in 1984.
Fair enough.
It's the only award that it won. Mary Whitehouse was not impressed because of the depictions of Satanism in several of the shows.
Wow, yes.
And
yeah, there was a bit of that, that's true.
And Richard Carpenter, who I will come to in a bit, did a public debate with Mary Whitehouse about the show.
Wow.
In which he introduced himself by saying, "Hi, I'm Richard Carpenter. I'm a professional television writer. You're a professional what now?"
Okay.
But now we get on to the good stuff.
Oh, we haven't got there yet.
Oh, no. Very cool. So we've got Michael Praed. He's very cute. We've got Jason Connery playing Robin in the last season. Also very cute. We've got Ray Winston, who is known for...
I was very surprised. It took me until towards the end of the second episode that we watched to recognise that it was actually him.
Who's known for playing hard men in films. We've got a guy called Nicholas Grace playing the Sheriff of Nottingham, which
he just looked like Tim Curry.
He just looks like Tim Curry.
He just does look like Tim Curry. It took me by surprise every time he was on screen.
I don't know if he's doing it deliberately, but he's more Tim Curry than Tim Curry.
Yes, yes, I would agree with that.
In one episode, Richard the Lionheart, King of England, turns up where he's played by John Rhys-Davies.
Oh, okay.
We don't see that, sadly. The show was basically created by a chap called Richard Carpenter, who has an incredible list of shows that I loved when I was that kind of age. Cat Weasel, Ghosts of Motley Hall, Dick Turpin, which I really liked, The Adventures of Black Beauty,
Well, there's one I definitely saw.
Mm-hmm.
Great show. Haven't seen any of the others.
The Boy from Space, which I showed you a clip of, which was one
of the most horrifying things I've ever seen in my life.
Which was
a show like
7-year-olds helping them learn to read. Very, very creepy.
Mm-hmm.
Also, The Borrowers and The Scarlet Pimpernel.
Oh, The Borrowers was amazing.
So it was created by him, and it was written by him, and somebody called Anthony Horowitz.
Yes, he is quite a famous author now.
For doing...
Remind me.
Alex Rider.
Oh, Alex Rider. Okay, yes, fair.
So, Anthony Horowitz wrote Foyle's War, The Vanishing Man, which was this terrible, terrible Neil Morrissey vehicle in which there was a guy who'd been, like, gamma irradiated or something, and he could turn invisible when he was wet.
What?
So the show basically involved Neil Morrissey getting his kit off and then having a bucket of water thrown at him so he would then turn invisible.
Okay.
It was really bad.
Sounds ridiculous.
And the episodes were directed by a chap called Ian Sharp. And Ian Sharp filmed The Professionals.
The Professionals. Wow.
Who Dares Wins, which is a very, very popular film. Who Framed Roger Rabbit?
Okay.
GoldenEye?
Eh.
And... he was one of the people who, at very short notice, stepped in to help with a particular film when the director went off in a huff.
What?
Split Second.
Oh, no!
So it is directly related.
To a previous podcast episode. Wow. Yup. Okay.
Oh, that's just amazing. Right, I will try and shut up after all of that. Where do you want to go?
It's a good question. I mean, we can all of us be gods?
Yeah. So the show is talked about a lot because it has these mystic elements.
Yeah.
Describe the mystic elements that you saw in the...
So there's people... are kind of having visions, and there's like a prophecy that the hooded man is going to cause problems, but he's also described as Hearn's son, and a guy in an antler hat essentially wanders out of the forest and tells him that he's got to accept his destiny. But then when Robin actually talks to supposedly Hearn, he is a man. And he says, "You're just a man." And then Hearn says, "We can all of us be gods." And then everybody starts calling Robin Hearn's son, and it's all a bit weird, and I didn't really get it.
It's quite wibbly. My recollection was that literally Hearn the Hunter, the god, would wander out of the forest and talk to Robin. And what happens in this episode is he meets this guy who lives in a cave with a...
Yeah, he just hangs around in this very damp cave and for whenever Robin happens to rock up and ask him questions...
So the guy lives in this cave with this antler hat, and he says to Robin, "During the times that I am possessed by Hearn, you're talking directly to the god, and then the rest of the time I'm just a man."
Okay, I think I missed that explanation.
So
I didn't watch it on double speed, I promise. Okay. I really wanted to, because I thought it could have done with it, because it was so slow. But my New Year's resolution was to only consume media on 1x speed, and I have not as yet... broken that.
So I thought Hearn would kind of whiffle out of the woods and say, "You must go and do these things," and then whiffle off again. And it turns out that there was a guy who is just sometimes possessed by the god.
And the rest of the time hanging out in a very damp cave.
And I think
it seems a bit harsh.
Probably to do with taking lots of drugs. Because also, as you said, Robin has these visions of the future.
Yeah.
Which also possibly taking lots of drugs. But in terms of the mystic thing, there's also the bad guy.
Yes, the Baron of Belem,
mm-hmm.
who worships Satan and does spells on people to control them and makes horrible rituals and stuff and also has visions of the future.
It is interesting that in the show magic is obviously just real.
Yeah.
It's not like some of these shows where you go, "Ooh, they're showing things that might be supernatural or might have... real reasons." It's obviously just real, because in the big fight at the end, when Robin goes to go and attack this guy, he waves his sword around like 30 feet away from Robin and cuts him. So, you know, it's
yes.
obviously yeah, yeah. magic is a real thing.
Mm-hmm.
But yeah, the Satanism is really interesting because Sheriff of Nottingham.
I'm glad it wasn't just me.
No, definitely not. His brother is... Do you have a name?
No, but he's like a cardinal or something.
Yeah,
he's a member of the church.
He's some kind of senior priest.
Yeah.
And this other guy, who is obviously the Satanist,
mm.
and he wears all sorts of satanic jewellery and stuff, rocks up and hangs out at their place. And the sheriff and the cardinal talk to each other about how much they don't like him, but the cardinal yeah. doesn't go, we should burn this guy, he's literally a Satanist.
No, he does so not, it's true.
But so what they're saying is it's more important to have solidarity about being in the ruling class
yeah,
than it is to have solidarity about being in the same religion, which is just really interesting.
But Robin goes to see Hearn at one point and says, what must I do? And Hearn says...
I have no idea.
Act without thinking.
Oh, does he? Yes. Oh, okay.
I was like, that's not the kind of advice you normally expect.
Mm-hmm. Well, if you're running at people with swords, perhaps it's
a
good idea. I don't really know.
Yeah.
What do you want to talk about now?
There was a fantastic framing shot from between Robin's legs. I wrote down... Crotch cam.
Okay.
You've gone from mysticism to crotch cam.
Can we talk a bit about the style then?
Sure.
Lots
of slow pans and low portentous music.
Lots of it shot outside.
Yes.
Which is very hard to light. I was very impressed with how good it looked.
Yeah.
Because often when you're in Britain, you've got overcast skies, it just looks terrible. But this looked really well done.
Yeah.
Lots of shots through leaves and branches of trees, very arty. There was a bit where it was raining, and I really think they were just having a rain being dropped directly in front of the camera, and the people actually weren't wet in the background.
Yeah, well, that's usually the way.
Which was very silly.
Because it's very... difficult to keep continuity if people are getting wet, but yes, that yeah. is usually what happens in these kinds of things.
They sometimes have what we both complain about in modern day cinematography, which is where the camera's right up in the action, so you can't actually see what's happening, which is a little annoying.
There's lots of very nice horses.
Lots of very nice horses. Some lovely shots of a stone circle. There's a lovely shot of a buck in the distance, like mm-hmm. a 12-point deer. That was very nice. There were some shots that were shot as if from first person.
Yeah.
So running through trees and stuff, that was quite nicely put together. I found myself wondering how they did the effect where they shoot the one arrow into the other one. It's very cleverly done.
Yes, that was the classic.
I couldn't work out how they...
splitting the arrow in the contest. They did it.
And in terms of style, the other thing I've got written down is everybody has nice clothes. And I don't just mean the people in the castle who are rich have nice clothes. The outlaws have very
yes,
nice
do.
Clothes.
That is true.
So, you know, it looks very cool. You mentioned briefly the music. The title music I really like, because I like Clannad music in general. But under the rest of the music, I've just got dum-dum, because that's basically what the rest of the music was.
Yes.
As you say, slow and sweeping, or just suddenly... there is action. It's like, okay.
I thought tonally it was quite uneven.
Yes.
Because it was a lot darker than I was expecting. Because Robin gets arrested for, well, because Much the Miller's son, who is the Miller's son called Much and not the son of Much the Miller in this.
Okay.
But I think sometimes it's the other way around.
It could be.
Kills one of the king's deer, and Robin has come out to try and stop him, and they both get arrested. And Robin ends up imprisoned
In an oubliette.
In an oubliette, yes indeed. With...
I just learned this word recently, listeners.
Will Scarlet and Dickon and Tom the Fletcher and... a couple of other people. And yes, Will, who is Ray Winston, tells an incredibly horrible story about his wife being gang raped by a whole load of soldiers and then trampled to death.
Yes.
Which is kind of grim. And so he's all enraged and wanting vengeance. But then when they get out and they're kind of wafting around the forest, he's kind of chirpy.
I really the best thing I like about Will Scarlet is that at least four or five times in the show, I'm slightly paraphrasing, but he essentially says, "Shut up, Robin, that's a stupid idea, you're an idiot."
Yes, very
and
true.
He just says it over and over again, and I think that's really cool.
But he's also quite chirpy, so he loses all of his righteous rage. And then...
I mean, he has killed a lot of people by then.
Much's father, who is also Robin's adoptive father,
yes,
gets horribly killed.
Yes.
And Much runs through the forest wailing.
Yes.
And then 10 minutes later, he's fine.
Grief is a strange thing, but yes.
And then there are some, you know, lighter bits.
Mm-hmm.
And then there's a battle at the end, and they just... Robin buggers off and leaves Tom and Dickon to die.
Yeah, that is...
Oh, he was like, what on earth?
Very dark that they spend a bunch of time introducing two characters that...
they just get Robin slaughtered. And
they just get killed off at the end.
Because Robin disappears off with Marion.
Yep, pretty much. Yep.
So it was quite uneven, I would say.
Mm-hmm.
And darker than I was expecting. That was why I was saying it must have been aimed at a slightly older audience. Because, I mean... gang rape and trampled to death.
Yeah. Yeah.
The first mention of a woman, that is. And, you know, the Baron of Belem talks about his wife having killed herself. So, yeah, it's not great for women.
It's it's not great for women at all.
But then I guess Robin Hood stories rarely are.
Mm.
But, yeah, so it did confuse me a little bit.
Can I do a tenuous segue?
Well, of course.
We could have just called this show Tenuous Segue.
Yes.
that would have been great.
Very true. Go on.
So we talked a bit about fighting, and I was going to talk about the fighting a lot.
Okay.
So there's a lot of Robin's people using bows and arrows to kill people at a distance, mm-hmm. and the bad guys don't seem to have access to this technology because they run towards people with swords while other people shoot them with arrows.
There's a whole line of archers behind the shield wall at the end.
Is there?
Yeah.
Oh, maybe I don't remember.
I did feel a bit sorry for the random soldiers and castle guards who got slaughtered a lot.
So the castle guards, I've just written down, are very stupid. Also, why have all the guards not quit when half of their friends have been killed? Most of the castle guards seem to die not from being stabbed, but by acrobatically falling off high places. They've obviously got a stuntman who's very good at landing on airbags and just used him a lot to fall off things.
Yeah, yeah.
So that was amusing. I thought, because there's a bit where they're in during the prison break, they go into a room where there's a guy who's standing on the opposite side of a table who they want to attack. And rather than running around the table, he leaps onto the table and then the table then collapses. And I'm like, you know, keeping the carpenter in good business. They're just like demolishing furniture for apparently no good reason. I like the fact that the fighting is mostly shown for being really scrappy.
Yes.
It's not these like really clean sword fights that you often get in period films with people standing 3 feet apart and clacking swords together. It was really quite in it.
My favourite fight was when Friar Tuck was defending Marion because he fights dirty, and I was here for it. Mm. He was great.
He was great. I really liked him as a character.
Yeah.
There's a guy, I think it's the guy who works for the Satanist who we'll come back to at the end.
I liked him.
He was also quite cute, but he rocks up with a double short sword style, which is my favourite fighting style.
He had a good arc, even though it was repeated, because Little John starts out as being enslaved to the Baron of Belem and
enslaved magically.
Magically, yes. Mm. He's got sigils
upside down
on him.
Pentagram.
Yeah. And so he's sent out to kill Robin, and Robin realises what's going on, and he washes the marks off, and then Little John joins them.
Mm-hmm.
And then when we get the archery competition, the Baron of Belem brings this guy called Nazir, who, it turns out, is similarly enslaved.
Oh, was he?
Yeah.
I totally missed that.
Yeah, because he's fighting Robin in the satanic torture dungeon.
Yeah.
And when the Baron of Belem is killed, it releases him from the spell.
Oh, I'd completely missed that.
And that's why And then he pretends that he's still going to attack him.
Yeah.
And then he goes, oh, just joking. And that's why Robin stops the others from killing him when they turn up.
And then he turns up at the end in Sherwood.
Yes.
And it's like, is he going to go and join Robin's Merry Band?
Yes, probably. Mm, yeah, so he was released from the spell when the Baron got killed.
Yeah, I thought it was really good. The number of people also wandering about with quarterstaffs.
Yeah.
Because quarterstaff is a proper weapon you can use against a sword, because if it's thick enough, a sword can't cut through it. And then you can
whack the classic John fighting Robin on the log across the river was pretty good.
It was pretty good. It was really funny, because you mentioned that little John had this symbol on that Robin washes off. And little John turns up, and I was like, why has he got an upside down pentagram tattooed on his chest? Is that not going to make people think he's a Satanist? Oh!
But it wasn't actually tattooed, luckily.
Yeah, I was. But I'd spotted it, but I couldn't click that it was something that somebody else had done.
Yeah. Robin causes as much of the doom as he prevents.
Oh, I'm sure that's
because
true.
Because when it's Guy of Gisborne who actually stops Robin and Much in the forest and arrests them.
He's also kind of useless, though.
He is kind of useless.
And he's about 16.
Who, Guy of Gisborne?
Yeah.
Okay, if you say so.
I mean, he's much younger than the rest of the characters.
Let me finish! Sorry. So Gisborne is questioning them, and Robin says, oh, it was me, I killed the stag. This is just Much, the miller's son. And he has absolutely no reason to tell him who he is. And that's why Gisborne then goes and tortures the miller.
Oh,
so he causes the miller's death by telling Gisborne that that's who Much is.
Yeah.
And that's who would know where they were.
Well spotted. I hadn't even thought of that.
And he also, you know, buggers off at the end and leaves Tom and Dickon to die.
Well, yes.
So I wasn't so keen on him by the end.
Mm-hmm. What else you got?
There were a couple of weird moments where at one point they were attacking I think it was probably Guy of Gisborne and some of the men. Mm. And Marion was there because they were taking her to the convent. And while they were in the battle, he kind of grabs Marion and goes, go with Much, you'll be safe. And I was like, I don't think so, because Much spends most of the time falling down and crying a lot.
I mean, that is true as it goes.
And then there was another bit where Robin said he had to go and save Marion, because that happened a lot, and he had to go off and do it on his own for some reason. And then after he'd gone, Little John turns to the others and says, if he's not back by dawn, I'm going after him. You're with me? And nobody says anything. They all just kind of look at him and stare at their fingernails and go, oh, I don't know about that, sorry.
That seems entirely appropriate.
Yeah.
There's a bit where they try to fool Gisborne. So when Robin goes to go and see Herne, Herne gives him a very nice, very expensive sword.
Yes.
Which he's
very
got
shiny.
From somewhere.
Mm-hmm.
Who knows? Out of a lake, maybe. Who can tell? And he gives this to Robin. And Robin puts the sword in the path when Gisborne's coming up to it and ties a string to it.
Yeah.
And then drags it along the thing. And somebody goes, the sword is possessed.
It's enchanted.
Which makes me think several things. First of all, that at that kind of period, random things just being enchanted was just how it was.
Yeah.
People would have just believed that kind of thing.
Yeah.
Second of all, you're taking a very nice sword and dragging it along the ground.
Mm, yeah, fair.
Which is not good for it.
No.
But the third thing is that when I think actually Gisborne gets off and gets to the sword, realises it's on a string, cuts the string, picks it up and goes, huh, and then throws it in a bush.
Yes, that was quite strange.
I'm like, that's a ludicrously expensive sword you just threw in that bush. Oh my God.
Yeah.
So, I think I might be done.
Oh, wow. Everybody loves a short show.
Hmm. I mean, there's presumably a lot to talk about in terms of Marion. Before we get to her, I just wanted to, I mean, I haven't seen Jason Connery doing the part, but
no.
Michael Praed's very plummy. He has obviously been to the Royal Shakespeare Company.
Really?
That's how it came over to me. But
okay, I didn't really notice that. I was just distracted by the hair.
The hair is very nice. Mm,
yeah. The hair is doing a lot of good work in this show.
Let's talk about Marion. I have a couple of things, but
yes, Marion, I did actually like her.
Mm-hmm.
She is the only woman who gets lines in the entire two episodes. There are a couple of nuns wandering about in the background at the convent, and that's it.
Mm-hmm.
She doesn't even have any maid servants or anything.
Mm.
It's just her. That's it. And she starts out, she's got a good you know, attitude on her. Because
she's spunky.
Yeah. Because the Baron of Belem turns up and says, "You've probably heard that my wife killed herself. Will you marry me?" I was like, what? Like the worst proposal ever. I mean, I know he's an evil, Satan-worshipping, horrible person. But, I mean, you got to try a bit harder than that, sir.
I mean, he also has a couple of weird, evil slave women who just live in his castle.
I don't remember them.
When Robin goes to fight him at the end and he turns up, they're like Brides of Frankenstein. They kind of whiffle at the camp. They don't ever say anything. But they're kind of like, "Ooh, we are so evil. Come and meet our evil master."
Okay. But yes, Marion, as is usual in this, gets the choice between marrying an evil devil worshipper or going to live in a convent.
Well, you know...
Because, you know, that's your lot.
But, I mean, even as late as... Pride and Prejudice, you know, you had you had to marry somebody because you weren't allowed to have your own money.
I'm not saying it's not realistic for the time period. I'm just saying, you know, it's not great.
Mm-hmm.
But the progression of her relationship with Robin was nonsense. He bursts into her bedroom, and that's how they meet, and they're kissing after less than 5 minutes acquaintance in the forest.
I also want.
She does stop him, and asks him to take her to the abbey, and very sensibly questions the practicality of living in the forest. I was quite impressed by that. He says, "You could come and live with me in the forest." She's like, "No, thanks. I'd rather have a much more comfortable, probably not that comfortable, but more comfortable than living in the forest life in a convent."
My note I wrote down was, "Stay with me in Sherwood with my very outdoor sanitary facilities and my bunch of rough young men."
Exactly, yes. She is understandably not so keen on that plan.
You did mention the kissing there briefly, which I just wanted to touch on, which is that kissing is very bad.
Yes, it's very bad kissing. Very bad kissing. So I'm not really sure I see the appeal. And then after they've spent, maybe 20 minutes in each other's company, they get married in the forest.
It's not explicit.
So I mean, they're standing.
The last
and
episode.
She's wearing flowers, and Hearn is conducting a ceremony.
It certainly looks that way, but it's not super explicit.
And then there's smooching.
It's difficult to tell.
And she is a lady.
I mean, yes. I mean, that was also my assumption, but it's not. It's not explicit. The two things I would say about Marion, one of which is contentious.
Go on.
The first one is that she spends almost the entire time wandering around in a nightie. She doesn't seem to own any other clothes.
Also true.
It's like, she's back. She's still wearing her nightie.
Yeah.
Is she not kind of chilly?
Maybe.
So that was one thing. And the second thing was, she's not... I thought she was quite cute, but she's not classically attractive.
No. No, I quite liked that.
And I also like that, but I wonder whether it's an interesting choice by the casting
not
people.
Not over-processed.
Yes, exactly that. I just thought that was an interesting choice.
Yeah. She was a bit hit and miss because, fair, she is operating under quite bad restrictions in terms of being a woman, and she does talk back to the men in authority over her in quite an impressive way, but she does also spend quite a lot of time running away and falling down. But then she's wearing a nightie, and you wouldn't expect her to be able to defend herself. But that's the reason why Robin leaves the battlefield at the end to get her to safety, leaving Tom and Dickon to die.
I mean, to be fair, Much also spends a lot of time
running away and falling down. That's also true.
Mm-hmm.
Fair.
Yep. Well, you need people to be saved if you're a saviour character. So.
Yep.
Do we have anything else? I think I might
100% white.
Yes.
So no diversity at all. And as I said, Marion is the only female character who has a name or any lines.
I think, is Nazir white? I suspect the actor playing him...
True, no, good point.
I suspect the actor playing him is actually Arabic.
Yes, very good point. Well done. I'm glad you corrected me on that. Yes.
Yeah.
Agreed.
I think that's the only one.
Yes. No, but that is a very good point.
I mean, to be fair, probably in that period of English history, there wouldn't be a lot of non-white people.
Fair.
But yes. Are we done?
Massive body count, but no blood.
Yeah, so there was a thing I read somewhere about
that was a
this.
Whole thing about ratings, isn't there?
There was a, something
you
I read.
You have lots of people being killed as long as you don't actually see any blood, because because yeah. Robin, there's
I think
a magic
it was about
arrow.
Making it a kids show. Is
yeah,
something
there's
you're
a
not
there's a very chunky silver arrow,
so stupid.
Which is the MacGuffin.
It is the it's I've
the completely unexplained MacGuffin.
I fell briefly into a Wikipedia rabbit hole looking up the definition and etymology of MacGuffin when I wrote MacGuffin down for this. So
and
it was really
confusing
weird.
Because the Baron of Bellem enchants Robin when he's got Marion shackled to the pentagram and he's going to sacrifice her, and he gives Robin a knife and thinks that he has enchanted Robin, and Robin is kind of slowly walking towards Marion while she's screaming, no, Robin, no. And then he raises the knife up above his head, and when he brings it down, it's transformed into the arrow, and he shoves it into the Baron of Bellem's chest.
I did not see that.
And then when he pulls it out
confused.
Of the Baron of Bellem's chest, it's completely clean.
Yeah, so I missed all of that.
Yeah.
The thing is, somewhere...
Sorry, we got off track after the diversity data.
Somewhere near the start, the Sheriff Nottingham is showing his brother, the bishop or whatever, this giant chunky silver arrow and going, this is what they're all after. They need this as a symbol for their, you know, fight against us. And I'm like, why don't you just melt it down? There's a lot of nice silver there. You can turn it into coins.
Yeah. yeah, it was a completely unexplained MacGuffin.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Okay, that wraps it up for this month's discussion. Time for the ratings. As people know, we use a standard 5-star rating system with half stars allowed. What's your rating?
What was that?
It's a 10-star scale.
10-star scale, yes. Yes, very true, very true.
What's your rating for Robin of Sherwood?
I put 3.5. I quite enjoyed it.
Oh.
It was unexpected in some ways. It was uneven in some ways. It was very, very slow.
Mm.
Very slow.
Mm.
But yeah, I had a good time.
Oh, I'm glad.
3.5. How about you?
I'm only giving it... Yeah, I'm still only giving it 2.
Harsh!
Nearly made
but
up.
Fair.
Nearly made up to 2.5, but then I was like... We didn't have enough positive things for me to add another half star to it.
Oh
so
dear!
It's,
fair
it's
enough.
Only staying up.
No, I had a good time. So you didn't still love it? Well, you're not sure you
no.
loved it in the first place.
Well, I did think I watched all of it when
okay.
it first came out. Well, I don't remember very much of it, and no, I'm afraid I did not, as you say, still love it. So next time, did you say there were options?
Well, it depends, because I definitely watched this show and it's possibly a bit too recent to be technically eligible, but it's our show and we make the rules.
Yep.
But I can't remember whether you watched it with me or not. Did you watch Dickensian?
No, I'd really like to.
Yeah, because you've read some Dickens now, so
yeah.
I've been saving it until you finish Bleak House.
I mean, my only question should be, should I read more Dickens to get more of the jokes?
I mean, probably, but I think you probably know enough of, like, the classic stuff like Christmas Carol and Great Expectations.
I'm going to have to pause the show every 30 seconds and ask, what is that a reference to?
Yeah, well, you're not going to be watching it with me. You can look up whatever
fair.
You want.
Yeah.
I mean,
yeah,
potentially
sure.
read a couple of summaries of the big hitters.
Yeah. That's an excellent idea.
Yeah, because I'd quite like to watch it again. I've been waiting for you to finish Bleak House,
awesome.
Which was a while ago now, but I hadn't come up.
Like, many episodes?
I think it might be 8, but they're only like half an hour each or something.
Oh, okay.
But it is like a whole complete arc,
mm-hmm. okay.
I think.
Cool.
Go
for it.
But it's very watchable,
mm-hmm.
I feel. So yeah, I'd like to give it a go because I'd quite like to see it again. And it would be interesting to see whether there is enough of Dickens' knowledge in the zeitgeist for you to get it.
Fair.
With some, you know, Bleak House references thrown in, maybe. I don't know.
I did like Bleak House.
I know you did.
Yeah.
I thought you would.
I was one of those many people who was massively put off Dickens for most of their life by being forced to read it at school, and then it turns out, like, 35 years later, when I read it again for fun, it was really good.
Yep. But yes, that is it for this month's episode of Will You Still Love It Tomorrow? Many thanks to Cambo for our theme music, and thank you so much for listening. If you like the show, please rate and review it wherever you get your podcasts.
And if you have any comments, or if you want to tell us about a time that you shared some media you love, and whether or not you still loved it afterwards, you can always email us at willyoustilloveit@gmail.com. We'd love to hear from you.
Okay. Please join us next month to find out what Dave thinks of Dickensian.
and whether Annie still loves it after our discussion.
Bye for now.